Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show, the one you're about to listen to, yes, this show, originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks. Aww. On Saturday, March 9th, 2013. This is episode 959. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rackspace, the open cloud company. At Rackspace, build what you want, where you want, and how you want. All backed by their world-renowned fanatical support. Try it today. Download the open cloud free at rackspace.com/open. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. The number call 866. Actually, it's 88. It's not 866. 88. Ask Leo. 888. Still a toll-free number. It's confusing, isn't it? They had 800 numbers for a long time. Now they have a bunch of other ones. I guess we ran out. It's been for, since 2007? 8888, Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., it's still toll-free. You just use Skype or some other VoIP client, voice over the internet client, and that'll get to us. And we're going to talk about the new Facebook. I don't have it yet, so if you've got it, you know, the new look Facebook, if you got it, I want you to call me and tell me what it looks like. I mean, I can. Facebook has a demo, but I want to see what it looks like. I want you to tell me if you like it. Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook says, "We want it to be more like your daily newspaper." This is, you know, on the one hand, I want to say, "Hey, just stop mucking around with it. Let's just can you just leave it?" Let it be for, I don't know, a year? I don't know, just a little while? Or just at least kind of stick to your guns and say, well, because we all joined Facebook because we thought this was a way to stay in touch with friends and family, right? I really wasn't looking for a daily newspaper. That wasn't the plan, really. I just, what is the, I think if you go to Facebook .com/about/ and I don't remember. Chat room, do you remember what the link was? The chat, see, we have a great chat room. By the way, I should explain. I know nothing. As I age, I've forgotten more than I ever learned. So that means I'm a negative one. Facebook.com/newsfeed. Thank you. See, but I have these people in the chat room. There's quite a few of them, in fact. About 1,000 strong most weekends. And they're my brains. Most of them listening long enough that they know what I'm looking for. Facebook.com/newsfeed. Goodbye, clutter, says Facebook. Hello, bright, beautiful stories. You know, one problem I have, and maybe this is why they did it, but one problem I have is my Facebook feed now is full of advertising. You know, people who are paying money to get into my news feed. So maybe that's why they're doing it. Oh, yeah, your ads will be bursting with color. Yeah, great. Hello, ad. Goodbye, clutter. Hello, bright, beautiful ads. I do like the big pictures. Boy, the pictures got big. And this, I think, is a little bit of a response to Google Plus, which no one uses. Except for photographers who love it because it's a great place to show off their photos. And this does look, feel a little bit like this. They also have a new kind of content types. They've got a calendar content type, it looks like. And then if you follow a brand, they'll have a brand content type. The good news, here's the improvement. Maybe they, you know, Facebook giveth and Facebook taketh away. The good news is one of the problems I've had for a long time with a news feed is that by some estimates, only about a third of what your friends post actually gets into it. Did you know that? Not you probably did, because every once in a while somebody will say, "Hey, you didn't say anything about, or you didn't, I didn't. Why didn't you post? I never saw the." And I say, "I did post it. You just didn't see it, because only about a third of what I post gets through." So now you've got a little bit more control. You can focus on groups or on interests, and you can show those. In other words, you can give Facebook some information about what you want to see. It remains to be seen if you get to see everything, or if it's still Facebook deciding this is important. This notice from your friends, who cares? I notice the ads are always important. They also say mobile, but you don't get the redesigned unless you ask for it. So I'm going to join the waiting list. I haven't done that yet. See, I should have. Oh, I'm on the list. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you, Overlord, Facebook the Overlord. Thank you. So if you go to facebook.com/newsfeed and you scroll all the way to the bottom, there's a big green button. It says, "Please, sir, please, can I have the new feed? You may regret it." I don't know. What do you think? Is this good? I mean, everybody has to improve. So, you can't just sit still, especially in the tech industry. I think that's one of the reasons the tech industry comes up with such kooky ideas, like this iWatch idea, the Apple Watch, that while Apple's saying nothing about, everybody who is in the know seems to say Apple's ramping up big time, maybe even for a release this year. We do know Google's doing glass, those glasses that you wear. They're starting to leak out now. People are starting to wear those. I think these are companies just making up. They're making it up now. They did all the easy stuff. Now they're just making up stuff, hoping we like it. Web 9312 in our chat room. By the way, if you go to the chat room through the webpage and you just have a generic name like Web 9312, you can use the nick command to give yourself a real nickname. But Web 9312 says, yeah, those same people who have been talking about the Apple Watch have been talking about the Apple TV for a year. Hell yeah. The iTV, you know, the television set that's an Apple device. Whatever happened to that? Google Glass, $1,500 glasses. $1,500 glasses. Somebody says, yeah, great until you... Fred Penguin says, great until you step on the glasses. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We'll talk about that. I really should probably talk about my new camera, because I've been looking, and I know you're all interested somewhat in cameras. Our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt, joins us at 5:30, as I mentioned, but... I've been looking for a while. I'm all tangled up there. Thank goodness I have an assistant who came in and untangled that. Liz just earned her pay today. My strap was tangled up in the in-basket. I have a rather full in-basket. That's the problem. But I was looking for something small for traveling because I'm not a good photographer. But I'm good for the industry. I spent a lot of money trying to get better, thinking it's the equipment. Shakespeare was all about the pen and paper he was using. Anyway, I was looking for something smaller than the fancy big SLR, the digital SLR that I was using, the Canon 5D. So I found a little tiny Olympus OM-D. This is a kind of a throwback because I remember the old Olympus OM-1 film camera back when I was in college. This was the favorite of students. It was tiny and light and beautiful film camera. And so this is their digital version of it. You know, it's kind of pretty. I'll talk a little bit about it and the pros and the cons of digital photography. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. 5:30 the hour, we'll talk home theater with Scott Wilkinson. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wish. What do you wish for in the tech world? 88 88. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. What is your wish? Maybe I can grant it or help you get it done. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Again, outside the U.S., you can use Skype or some other voice over the internet technology to make the phone call to reach me. And it's cheap. It costs you almost nothing. Like nothing at all. A few bits of electricity. That's about it. I don't have the call screening up yet. Kyle, can you tell me who the first caller is? Let's say hello.
Yeah, let's go to Paul in San Diego.
Hello, Paul in San Diego, listening on the great KOGO, KOGO. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Leo. I'm a great fan of Carbonite. It saved my butt many times.
Great. Good news, our advertiser.
Yes, and you always suggest also doing a similar thing on a local disk drive.
Yeah, the more, you can't have too many backups. Well, you could, but I think three is a nice number, an original and two backups. That's a good feeling.
I like to do incremental backups every 10 minutes or so
right,
that if I make a mistake, I could retrieve a previous version of the file.
Good idea.
But I haven't found any software that is as friendly to use as Carbonite. Any suggestions?
Yeah. You want to do, because on the Mac, they have this Time Machine, which is fabulous.
I'm a PC.
You're on a PC, of course. But it kind of does what you want it to do, which is it backs up all changes and multiple changes. So that it's called versioning. Which version of Windows are you on?
7.
I think you have versioning, as I remember, you have versioning in Windows 7. Let me just see. The idea being, that it's doing what you want it to do, which is as you change a file, it saves it. And then you change it again, it saves another copy. And if you want to go back, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking to see how we turn this on Windows 7. I'm pretty sure it has version. Maybe the chat room could. Is it called Shadow Copy? Is that what it's called? Maybe that's why I can't find it. They gave it a name. Yeah. So what you're looking for, you can do Shadow Copy in Windows 7, and Windows Vista even had Shadow Copy. So what it does, I think what you want, I mean, it won't do it for every kind of document, but it will do it for enough. So what you're going to do is you're going to go to the System Properties Control Panel, and you will see a System Protection tab in there. And that's the configuration screen for Shadow Copy. You can tell it which drives you want to have that on. And it does now. It copies it to a portion of the local hard drive. But you could then, I presume, you could then back up those shadow copies, so you'd have copies on an external drive, for instance.
You think there's a nice program out there that do the same thing?
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if there's a third-party program? Maybe the chat room has a recommendation for that. As I said, Time Machine on the Mac does a very good job of this. It's automatically running in the background. How about FileBack? Oh, yeah, I remember FileBack. They're still around. FileBack-PC.com. Backup and synchronize files with media you're already familiar with, hard drives, removable drives, network drives, add versioning capability to Windows, keep extra copies of music, email, documents in multiple locations. This looks like a good choice. FileBack 4.1 is the current version, and it's $55, but I think you can try before you buy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for asking, because I wasn't sure what was out there. I don't use Windows Backup. I don't really like the built-in Windows Backup. I would turn on, why not turn on Shadow Copy? It hardly hurts, but I think it's nice to have a third party. Cobian Backup, says Uncle Bick, does the same thing, and it's free. Cobian is a lot better backup utility. So you could turn on Shadow Copy in Cobian, CobianSoft.com. A lot of people I know use Cobian Backup. And even though it's free, I think it's a pretty good choice free file sync from SourceForge. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We do this always. We copy all of these suggestions from that wonderful chat room I mentioned, and we put them in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And James DeRuvo's, as we talk, writing this all down, putting this all up there so you can refer to that. And there'll be more than one solution. Sync back. Here's another one. But it doesn't do every 10 minutes. Web 9730 mentions. So there you go. There's a number of choices for kind of automated backup. I don't see names. If you can hit return on those names, that would help. I'll go to line
3, Patricia in LA.
That's Patricia in LA. Hi, Patricia. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
So
I have this printer at my office that the district bought, and this printer is going to be the death of me because it works.
Printers are always the death of you. All printers are from that place down under that we like so little, and
they
I'm not
really
talking
are.
Australia.
They
yeah.
Really
Yeah.
And it worked fine before they decided to do the ingenious thing of putting a code to print back all of that shenanigans so that they could track each district.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the – yeah, okay. That you can blame on the boss, obviously.
Yes. Yeah, that we can blame on the boss.
Yeah.
But I could print 4, no problem. Okay. The drivers that I downloaded from Apple worked fine. Okay. That was all set up. Happy, happy, joy, joy. They added the code. The drivers that I had to download from the Rico website are corrupted.
Oh, great.
The drivers that they gave us with the printer don't work on the Mac. The guy that they sent over, who claimed that he knows how to set it up on Apple, has never used an Apple before.
Oh, please.
I swear.
Oh, please. So in order to use this system of tracking your use, you have to use a special driver. Is that it? You can't use the one Apple gives you?
Supposedly. And so then the guy informed us that after he played with it for like an hour and a half or so, he's like, oh, well, I think that the drivers, it's not in the drivers, that they haven't released the drivers for Mac yet.
Oh.
And you have to buy, it's a PostScript chip, and that's for the tune of about $600. I'll come install it for free.
Well, wait a minute. Now you need to call the district and say, hey, you understand that this tracking system you're installing is going to cost you $600 so that we can update it.
She's looking into it, but I'm
meanwhile, you can't print.
Exactly. In the meanwhile, I have to use, essentially, I have to PDF to myself, email to myself, or put on my Google Drive.
And print it at home.
Go over to one of the PCs. We have one computer that works properly with this printer out of like the 4 or 5.
Have you ever tried to, you know, if your printer supports Google Print, and most do, Google Cloud Print, have you ever tried that?
I have not.
I like Google Cloud Print. It's kind of cool. You could print over the internet to any printer, even the one down the hall, if it's a network printer.
It is a network printer.
Yeah. Well, that might be one solution, Patricia, to get that working. I'm not sure, to be honest. And I don't think this PostScript chip is necessary either. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me think about it. Scott Wilkinson is here. I feel for teachers. Were you ever a teacher, Scott?
I was.
Somehow you seem like you were that nice science teacher, I remember. What did
you
teach?
I hope I
music?
Was that nice math teacher.
Math? You taught math.
Yeah. In fact, I taught in a special program designed for underprivileged school districts, and I would go in and teach somewhat advanced math to elementary school kids, algebra, really. And in order to give them a positive learning experience in a subject that would otherwise mostly be considered scary
awful.
And
you were the fun math teacher.
I was.
Everybody had one of those. Did you wear funny socks or a weird tie or?
No, I didn't go. Didn't
reindeer
do that.
Reindeer antlers.
Quite.
No. So you probably understand how frustrating it must be for Patricia. She's obviously in a school district where PCs are preferred. Cost cutting, especially in California, is rampant. So they want to make sure they track every copy printed. That means she has to use a special driver that has a special enters a special code before she prints. But she's on a Mac, and nobody else in the district knows how to handle this.
Yeah.
And unfortunately.
School districts, boy.
Well, it's because there's no money. There's no budget. And
It's true. They're between a rock and a hard place. There's no doubt about it.
So I don't, Patricia, I don't know the answer, but we'll keep working on it. I think that you need to get the right driver. Maybe you could use Google Cloud Print. Maybe you could, I don't know. I think it's up to them to fix. Maybe they should buy you a PC. That'll eliminate all the savings that they're in from implementing this print tracking system.
Yeah, it's like, give me a break.
Come on. Let her print a little. So Scott Wilkinson is our home theater expert. As you may know, he is an editor at hometheaterhi-fi.com. Recently joined the avsforum.com as an editor there, which is really great. We're really, really happy to see you do that. And he also
thank you so much.
Hosts a podcast called Home Theater Geeks on my podcast network, Twit. So, Scott, you got any burning questions to answer from your readers?
I do. Well, I always got more questions than I can answer, and I try to do as many as I can, of course. This one from Jim Portillo. He's bought a Sony TV,
yeah,
and the sound quality was pretty bad, as it is with most TVs. So he tried to hook it up to his stereo. This TV does have twin RCA outputs, you know, the red and the white little RCA jacks. So he plugged that into his stereo, but now he's got to use two remotes because the TV's volume and mute controls on the TV's remote don't operate the stereo.
I hate it when that happens.
I know. And it's so common. Everybody seems to have this problem.
It's because they no longer put analog outs. You know, I solved it in the old days because I had a headphone jack on my TV.
Yes.
So I hooked the speakers up to that. And then when you push the volume up and down, it thought you were on headphones.
Correct.
But if you don't have an analog out, and most TVs now, it's just, optical.
Well, actually, they do have a digital, an analog out. This TV does, and most TVs do.
Oh, well, then you could do it that way, couldn't you?
It does not respond to the TV's volume control.
Well, then I don't know what it's for.
It's a fixed level output. Well, it generally would go back to an AV receiver or something like that.
What you really want is not an analog out. You want a headphone out, like I was.
Exactly. You want a headphone out, and that is disappearing.
Yeah.
From TVs all over. I mean, you basically can't find it anymore. So the answer to the guy's question really is to invest in a sound bar. Which really isn't that much.
I just bought the Sonos soundbar. I haven't set it up yet.
Ooh, I haven't heard that yet. It just came out
a couple of days ago.
That's right.
And
that's right.
I pre-ordered and it just came.
Oh, so, man. I bet you that sounds good because everything else Sonos makes is really high quality stuff.
I would think, well, it ought to be at that price.
<It's>, How much was it?
I think it was $600 or $700. Like all the Sonos stuff, it's pricey.
It's expensive.
But you get what you pay for. I'm a Sonos, kind of Sonos fanatic.
Yeah. Well, it's absolutely true. They make great stuff. It's expensive, but if you can afford it, then great.
My daughter came into my house and saw all the Sonos stuff. She said, "My, you're mighty well funded." I said, "Yes, dear.
Yes,
daddy,
dear.
Daddy's well funded. $699 for the Play Bar."
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's pretty expensive.
But what it does is it hooks up via HDMI, so it would be controlled by the remote, right?
Yes, absolutely. Now, I was thinking of somewhat less expensive options for this fellow.
Yes,
the Vizio makes a number of soundbars. They're most famous for their flat panel TVs, but they also make some really nice soundbars in the $200 to $300 range. So, you know, like less than half of what the Sonos soundbar is. Yamaha also makes some really nice ones. The YAS-101 is particularly good. And the advantage here is, in the Yamaha particularly, I looked a little bit at the Vizio, but I know that the Yamaha can learn the volume up-down commands from the TV remote and use those to increase and decrease its volume. Now, what you need in this case, Jim, is a self-powered soundbar. That is a soundbar with the amplifier built in, basically a self-contained unit. You can buy passive soundbars that need to be powered from an external device like an AV receiver or an amplifier or something, but that's not what you want. You want one that has its own power amp built in, and both the Yamaha and the Vizio have that. They're in the $200 to $300 range, and they will learn, at least the Yamaha will, the Vizio might, I don't remember, learn the volume control codes of the TV remote. And therefore, you can use one remote to control the whole thing, and you'll get much better sound than coming out of those TV speakers. He points out in the letter, and rightly so, that a lot of TVs today are so thin that the speakers are, first of all, mounted so that they fire backwards. And so if you have it wall mounted, the sound is going to just jump up against the wall right away and be distorted by weird reflections. But even if you have it on a stand away from the wall, it's not the ideal situation. Plus the fact that the TVs are so thin and speakers, you cannot change the laws of physics, as Scotty would say. They have to have some room to move. And the amount of room they have to move in these very super thin TVs is tiny. So you're not going to get good sound with flat panel TVs, which is why I always say if you don't have a real surround sound system, then you want to get a sound bar, which is going to improve things dramatically. Not as much as a real surround sound system, but certainly a heck of a lot better than what you're going to get in the TV.
Sound bar is kind of a compromise, but it's probably better to get an AV receiver. And solve
an
this,
AV receiver solve it and right. some real speakers. Yeah, yeah. Some speakers around
yeah.
the room.
Yeah.
But then you run into the spouse acceptance factor.
Yeah, because you got wires all over the room.
Got wires all over the place. Yeah. Now, interestingly, on Home Theater Geeks on Monday, I'm going to have on two people from the Wireless Speaker and yeah. Audio Association,
yeah.
WISA, Jim Venable and Alan Ruberg, who are going to be talking about a new standard for wireless audio. Which is very exciting because of this exact same problem. Most people don't like wires running all over the place, especially the spouses of home theater enthusiasts. I don't want another set of speakers in here. Where are those wires going to go? So setting up something like WISA, the Wireless Speaker and Audio Association.
Well, I'll be curious because the ones I've tried I've not been happy with.
Exactly yeah. right. This is a step forward, I really believe.
Scott Wilkinson, HomeTheaterHiFi.com, joins us every week to talk home theater. I've got a solution for Patricia. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
In trouble with these things called equations. Have to get the letter I love.
Math is hard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And earlier we had a call from Patricia, a student. I think it was her name. She was a teacher in a L.A. school district where they had moved to using user codes to track printer usage. You know, printers are expensive, paper, ink, all that stuff. And they don't want you printing out your 1040, your personal tax form, 400-page long tax form. So they want to keep track of who does what. It's not unusual in offices to do the same thing with copy machines and so forth. So once again, the chat room to the rescue. They've found a site from looks like Wisconsin Polytechnic University. Is that right? No, Worcester. I'm sorry, Worcester Polytechnic Institute in Worcester, Massachusetts. WPI.edu. Apparently, they do the same thing with Macs and Ricoh printers and user codes. And so this page is probably a good page, Patricia, for you to give to your IT guy who says, I have Mac experience and has never touched a Mac in his life. They say, and this is probably the most important thing, if you have ever connected this printer to your Mac, you need to delete the printer and reinstall it. You cannot just install on top of it. They do give a link to Ricoh's website. Now, I know you say you got corrupt drivers there. I'm hoping that these are not the same corrupt drivers. I'm crossing my fingers anyway, but they have a step-by-step how to add it, which is probably what you already know. It's really the kind of the basic how to add a printer to the Macintosh. But they do go through some of the specifics to entering your user code. It's down there in the job log, in the advanced printer settings. Oh, boy. So all of that, I'll tell you what we'll do. And thank you, Worcester Polytechnic Institute, Worcester, Mass., for that very enlightening page on printing to a Mac from a Ricoh printer with user codes enabled, which I think is exactly what she's trying to do. We'll put that in the show notes, techguylabs.com. I mentioned to the soundbar, the Sonos soundbar that I just ordered. I'm a Sonos fan. It is not cheap, $700. It actually would be cheaper probably to buy a home theater in a box system. There's some very good ones that would give you surround sound and an AV receiver. But I'll let you know how this Playbar from Sonos Works. Complements HD television screens with richly textured hi-fi sound. One of the advantages of this over an AV receiver, perhaps, is that it has Sonos functionality. So you could also, besides listening to your TV on it, you could put your own music in it. You could put Spotify and other, you know, Pandora, other Sonos stuff in there. It can be controlled via your phone or your tablet. So I think this might be an interesting solution for somebody who wants a sound bar. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Looks like 7 speakers. No, 9 speakers in there. Wow. Wow. And they have a night mode, which is essentially loudness. I don't know why you'd need to be loud at night. Maybe the crickets keeping you up. So, Patricia, there's your answer, and there's this. I'll give you a review of the soundbar. I'm going to set it up probably tonight or tomorrow, and I'll give you a review next week. Roger, La Mesa, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Roger.
Hi. Now I've got 2 questions for you. First
okay.
of all, is your Sonos soundbar self-contained, and does it have a subwoofer?
It is self-contained. It does not have a subwoofer. Sonos sells a separate subwoofer. But my experience with Sonos speaker systems in general, and I would guess this is true of the soundbar, again, I haven't hooked it up yet, is that they have pretty full range sound. You know, if you have the Sonos, the bigger Sonos speakers, as I do throughout the house, I find I don't really need a sub. Now, okay. Home theater is a little different, of course.
Right.
But I use Play 5s, and those sound great. And Play 5s, I would guess the Play Bar is a Play 5 stretched out long.
Okay.
But it's because of its shape, it can't have a subwoofer because, of course, as you know, the cones and subwoofers have to be big enough to move those low frequency sounds.
Right. So I wondered if it is optional, if it's wireless, the subwoofer.
Ah, that's a good question, and I don't know. That's a very good question. I would guess it is. All the Sonos stuff is essentially wireless. The idea of Sonos is you plug the speakers into the wall, but then they have a proprietary wireless network that rides on top of Wi-Fi to give you the sound. So I would guess the sub does not need to be connected. One of the things that Sonos does, you know, this is new for Sonos, and so I'm not going to give them a blanket recommendation on this, but one of the things Sonos does very well is synchronize music over this wireless network, something that's harder to do on Wi-Fi. That's why they use
right.
a proprietary network. But there's a problem there because you don't merely have to sync with a couple of speakers. You got to match the lip sync on the TV.
Right. That's what I was.
That's a little different.
So I'm looking forward to your review.
I'll give you a review.
Okay. Anyway, my original question was to you and or Scott, if he's still listening, and that is when you were at the CES
yes.
show, did you see or do they have the new Sharp Elite TVs, and are they better than the 2012s, which was Scott's best TV of all time?
Yeah, Sharp bought the didn't Sharp, Scott, buy the Elite designation from Pioneer?
Sharp bought it from they bought the name Elite. Pioneer, Panasonic bought the supposed
the Kuro technology.
Yeah.
Well, so Scott's still here. Scott, are you listening?
I am. Here I am.
Yeah. Well, he just appeared. Poof. Did you see the new? Did you see the 2013 Elites at Sharp's booth this year?
I did not. They did not have them there, which led to some rumors that maybe the Sharp Elite is going away.
Oh, great.
But as far as I've been able to determine so far, that is not true. The real story is that they are working on a Sharp Elite 4K.
Oh.
And they didn't quite have it ready for CES. It was not achieving the same black levels as the current generation of Sharp Elites. And so they chose not to bring them.
Yeah, remember, CES is an arbitrary date. It's just, you know, it's the first week in January. And if your product's not ready, you just,
yep,
too bad.
Too bad.
They ain't going to move CES.
That's right.
So would Sharp show it? What's the next event? Is it Cydia?
The big one is Cydia in September. And
that's
we're certainly going to see, I bet you, dimes to donuts, as they say. We will see a Sharp Elite 4K flat panel.
And you like this Elite LCD last year's a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The best LED illuminated LCD TV on the market, bar none, period, end of story.
So should I buy a 2012?
You know, if you have the money, it's very expensive.
And if you don't want a 4K.
Right.
Yes, and the question about whether or not to buy 4K is really a big question because
well, that's
going to
be a lot
content.
More expensive. I mean, the Elite now is expensive.
The Elite now is very. It's the most expensive flat panel. Consumer grade flat panel on the market today. The 60 inch is something like $6,000 and the 70 inch is $8,500.
Wow. And Roger, there's no 4K content. So, right. You know, it's a reasonable thing to say, yeah, I'm not going to wait for a 4K set.
Right.
You know, the 4K disc, 4K streaming, 4K delivery, it's going to be a while before that happens. So, if you need a new TV now and you have the money to buy the Sharp Elite, you won't be disappointed.
Okay. And one final question: do they make a TV mount? Any of the companies now a wall TV mount that holds a sound bar as well?
Oh, I'm sure.
I believe so. Yes, absolutely. I can't think of any name of a company right now, but I'm sure that they do.
And Sonos does sell a mount with the sound bar, I'm told. So,
yeah, but he's looking for an integrated.
I know he
one
wants it all in
the
one.
TV
I know,
and
I
the sound bar. One of the companies, Sanus or Chief or. One of these companies, I bet, makes such a thing.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah, and the Playbar wall mount kit, which is $40, probably is flexible enough that you could attach it to.
Well,
it.
Sure,
it'll be on an articulated TV
right.
wall mount.
So yeah, it'd be nice if the arm comes out, the TV comes out, that the soundbar comes out with it. Obviously,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. In fact, that's a good argument for a soundbar because you're now angling and repositioning the TV, and you're not going to want to move six speakers around.
Exactly.
So
that's
a good argument for a soundbar, actually. Yep. Hey, Roger, thanks for the call.
And I'll wait till next weekend to hear your.
Yeah, I'll give you a review. I'm not, unlike some, I'm not a big fan of soundbars. I don't think the imaging, the surround sound of a soundbar is ever going to be as good. And as you pointed out, Roger, the subwoofer would have to be separate. What would the lip sync be like? How is Sonos handling that? And by the way, the Sonos sub is $700 also. And now you got $1,400. You could easily buy a very good 5.1 surround sound, including an AV receiver for that price.
For less than that.
Less than that. So if that's, but again, remember, he wants to angle it, right? So maybe that's why he wants to use the soundbar. Sub doesn't have to, you don't have to move the sub around. Scott Wilkinson, thank you again. It's nice to have you.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, hour number two of the Tech Guy Show. Yeah, we're talking about computers and the internet. We're talking about home theater. Cell phones. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm going to try to get a new cell phone this week. I know. Some of the cynical ones among you are saying, well, how is that different from any other week? If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, 8888 Ask Leo. I buy this stuff so you don't have to. I review this stuff so you know. See, it's my job. And my current phone of choice is the Galaxy Note 2. Is it getting a little long in the tooth? It's a couple of months old now. And I'm very excited. HTC announced a couple of weeks ago, I guess, the HTC One, a new Android phone. And apparently it's arriving on Friday for T-Mobile and AT&T and I think Sprint. So, and I should mention that there are some products that we do get review units. I generally don't do review units unless it's something that I probably, can get a quick take on in a week, say, without having to spend a lot of time with it. But when it comes down to things like computers and cell phones, I really like to live with it for a while. A cell phone especially. It's the most personal of all personal computers, right? So my review kind of policy is to buy them. I have accounts with all the big four carriers, and I try to get the newest phones or the most interesting phones and then if I can, and this is not always easy because there's so many new phones all the time, but if I can, I try to use it as my main phone for at least a few weeks, if not longer. I think that's the only way you can tell because it sometimes takes a while. I'm having the same issue with Windows 8. I really wanted to give Windows 8 a fair shake. I know I've been pretty negative about Microsoft's new operating system. I've used it, but not used it as my go-to machine. So I went out and bought an Acer S7 notebook. I love the hardware, by the way. Not perfect, but very good. Very good. A little pricey. it's like $1,450 or $1,500 for an i7-based 4 gig notebook, but a gorgeous screen, a mediocre keyboard. The screen's a touchscreen, though, and I really wanted to give Windows 8 a chance with hardware designed for Windows 8, not some old laptop, the Windows 7 laptop that they just put Windows 8, slapped Windows 8. I wanted to design from the ground up to be a Windows 8 machine, and this is. And well, I'm pretty mixed on my, I'm going to give it some more time, but I keep running into little odd confusions. And I think really the bottom line on it, as I use it, and it's been this thought that crossed my mind has been confirmed by some of my Windows expert friends like Paul Thurrott, who does a site called the Super Site for Windows, Win Super Site, and he also does a Windows podcast for my network, Windows Weekly, is that it's really two operating systems, and that's why it's this is almost all of my confusion and issues, and I suspect this is true of most of you too, comes from the fact that it's really two different operating systems mushed together. It's the old Windows desktop, you know, just like Windows 7, plus this new touch-oriented computer that Windows RT made. I mean, you know, with the Metro interface, this tiles and touch. And it really is, you know, what happens, for instance, you have two Internet Explorers, one for, I'm going to call it Metro. Microsoft doesn't want to use that phrase. They call it, I think, the modern UI, but that's not a good, I'll call it Metro. You understand what I'm talking about, that tiled, Windows 8 tiled interface. So they have an Internet Explorer for Metro and an Internet Explorer for desktop. And sometimes one launches, sometimes the other, and it can be confusing. You have to go into deep into settings to say, hey, don't do that anymore. And and the Metro Windows Internet Explorer doesn't do everything the desktop one does. There's a Skype for Metro and a Skype for desktop. Same thing. It's very confusing. And I think that that's just the nature of having really two different operating systems fused together on a desktop, and they've got to figure this one out. My suspicion is that what Microsoft is planning is to phase desktop out, but they didn't want to do it right away because they knew we'd all scream. That really what they want to do is go to Metro all the time. And I'm not crazy about the idea of full screen apps all the time. What if you've got fine on a tablet, fine on a small monitor, an 11-inch monitor, but if you have a 27-inch display, there is no reason that my weather app has to occupy all 27 inches. It just doesn't make sense. And they're going to have to address these issues before they go much farther forward. So I feel I've given it a chance, but I'm going to continue to try. I think there's some needless confusion by the very nature of combining two operating systems under one roof. Cats and dogs living together in sin. Moving along to Ethan. He's trucking in Temecula. hey, Ethan, Leo Laforte, the tech guy.
Hey, I'm actually talking to Leo.
Yeah, you are. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I am great.
I think it was last episode, you were talking to a woman who was trying to go into business, and she wanted a computer. And
right.
She had some suggestions like Dell and some, but you mentioned HP, and you maybe said, don't get HP. Why you don't like HP?
A few reasons. I'll give you the reasons. Most PCs are commodities. They're very similar. Most manufacturers are very similar once you get down to it. But if you have a choice, the reason I don't choose HP is, first of all, they tend to load it up more than others. Everybody does this, but more than others, they tend to load it up with trialware that you have to clean up and uninstall and get rid of. I don't like all... Sometimes it's called... Well, I don't know if I want to say this on the air, but the junkware, let's use that phrase. That's one. Two, HP announced last year they were getting out of the PC business. Now, they backed off of that, but it doesn't give me much confidence about the future of HP and PCs. So I'm not crazy about, you know, they've shaken my confidence that this is a business they want to be in. That's the second one. And third, and this is more difficult to measure, but my general sense is that HPs have more problems. Now this comes and goes. You know, there were some overheating problems for a while. Those are probably fixed. So this comes and goes. But in general, my experience with HP hardware has been less than desirable. Now, the good news is there's plenty of choices. And really, really what you should judge a computer manufacturer on is not so much how the hardware comes to you, but how well they stand behind it. Support, I think, is maybe the most important thing. And I don't have any experience with HP support, but maybe somebody listening can fill us in on that. Ethan, do you buy HP stuff? Are you happy with it?
Well, the last two laptops that has been HP, and I haven't really had no problem with them. I mean, I do see the...
Were they Pavilions, or were they the more... Were they the higher end, or were they the... I think if you buy the business HP stuff, the higher end stuff, you're probably fine. It's the stuff that you see in the big box stores, the consumer, low-price consumer stuff that I think is really not so good.
Well, I paid... Well, for both of them, I paid over probably over $1,200.
Okay, so you got the high end. And I think it's true that if you buy, if you spend the money to get a good computer, HP is going to do a good job for you. It's more the lower end consumer ones that most people buy at the big box stores that I'm not crazy about. But again, that's just, it's a minor difference. So I'm not gonna say don't buy HP. Well, actually, I did tell her that, didn't I? I'll tell you, Lenovo, just rock solid stuff. Asus. ASUS, I've been very happy, rock solid stuff. Dell, in fact, our office or business office, where we use Windows in the business, and that's the business office, always by Dell. We do have an HP printer in the back, but I prefer Epson, to be honest with you. Not just because they're a sponsor, but I've always just bought Epson. So, the Envys are not bad, the newer crop of HPs. I'm not crazy about them, again. But not enough to say don't buy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I'm as straight as a line, as royal as a queen, as buzzed as a bee, as stealth as a tiger.
Is that song for Liz Lemon? I think it is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. With your questions, your comments, your suggestions. What was the story that you guys wanted to mention? The chat room was saying, hey, did you see this? The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, federal court in, I think they're in Northern California. They say, and I think this is a huge, huge good news, something to celebrate. They said it unanimously, by the way. You have the right to expect that your laptop or other devices will not be examined forensically without probable cause. Believe it or not, entering the U.S. was considered probable cause to have your laptops opened up, turned on, and forensically examined. This is the first time a U.S. court has said electronic privacy rights are not abandoned crossing the border. And that using an encrypted device is not grounds for suspicion. And they also pointed out, hey, because of cloud computing, searching a computer at the border really gives you access to servers all over the world, right? So this was because of a case in which an officer at the border went through a somebody's... laptop and looked at all their images. I think this is great. Good decision. Of course you shouldn't leave your rights at the border. Of course not. They said reasonable suspicion. Is that different from probable cause? Reasonable suspicion. It's probably a lower standard. Forgive me, I'm not a lawyer. Andy in Columbus, Ohio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Hi, Leo.
What can I do for you?
We got another printer question here.
Love those printer questions. Fire when ready, yeah. Gridley.
I have an HP, I guess it's e-printer, it's a D100 series.
Okay.
And I'm looking at getting a Craig Android tablet.
What's the brand name?
Craig.
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 Oh, I didn't know they made Android tablets. Everybody makes tablets these days. I assume it's the Craig Radio Company.
I'm assuming so.
Yeah. All right.
I'm a truck driver and an EMT, and I can get it at a truck stop for a fairly cheap price. Of course, you pay, you know, you get what you pay for.
Yeah, I mean, the reason you see these real cheap Android tablets is because, Chinese companies can make this without paying any money for the operating system. It's free. Google gives it to them. And, they probably cut corners in other ways. You're probably asking yourself, can it print? I presume that's what you're asking.
Well, I want to know, would I be able to download the, drivers and software for my HP printer onto that?
No.
Okay.
So no. What you really want to do is use, I mentioned this earlier, Google Cloud Print.
Okay.
If you have a Google account, and I would bet this printer, although you'll have to check, but I would bet this printer works with Cloud Print. The list of printers it does is quite long. What you'll do is it's a network printer, right? It's on the network?
Well, I'm a truck driver, and I carry it in my truck.
Oh, you carry it with you? Oh,
yeah.
So you want to hook the tablet up to the printer and print from that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so.
The tablet does have the USB port that could connect to the printer, and say it's a copier, printer, scanner.
Well, that's an interesting question. Let me ask the chat room if they have any experience. How can you print directly? I don't think you could do it via USB. I mean, if you're going to do it, I think you have to do it by network.
I'd have to set it up for a different Wi-Fi spot everywhere.
I mean, that would be annoying. Well, you could do an ad hoc network, I guess. Well, that's interesting. I don't know of any way to do it from the USB, like direct connect. I'll tell you one way you might be able to do it is Bluetooth. Do you have Bluetooth in that printer?
I don't know.
The other way you might do it, if it's, for instance, photos, is there are a lot of printers now that have memory card slots, SD card slots, that you can print directly from. It does not.
It does have that.
Oh, it does have that. Well, that's one way you could do it. I don't know if this Craig tablet has an SD card slot. Many do. This might not. But that would be one way to do it, is to put the document onto the card as a PDF, let's say, and then put the card in the printer and print. And it's a pain in the butt. But that would be one way to do it. There are Android tablets that have SD card slots, and they're fairly inexpensive. The Google Nexus tablets have, I think, the higher end. It's not the Google ones. The Samsung Touches have SD cards. Interesting question. Printing from an Android tablet. If you're printing it to a network, in fact, I just set up Google Cloud Print on my Epson printer at home, and that's kind of cool because I can print from any computer on the road anywhere. I print to Google. Google knows where my printer is because I've registered it with Cloud Print and then prints to it. Now, the printer has to have the capability. It sounds a little creepy, doesn't it? Yeah, Google will print it for me on my printer. It's an interesting idea. Andy, I'm not sure. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number when we come back. I know, Ed, you've been very patient. He's in upstate New York. He's got a speaker question. Stay tuned. Come on, let's go to upstate New York. Ed is on the line. Hi, Ed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I'm walking the dog, so if you hear any traffic.
Is that a euphemism? You're walking the dog? Or you're actually walking a dog?
Yep.
What kind of dog? What kind of dog?
He's a Heinz 57.
A mix, a true mix.
Yep.
So you said you have a Panasonic question.
Yeah, I bought a plasma.
Yep.
And I hate the sound, but,
Well, as Scott was saying earlier, it's amazing they still include speakers with TVs. I think it's because people would freak out if they didn't, but nobody who buys an HD TV they don't expect you to use the speakers that come with the TV. It's just kind of an extra.
Right.
They want you. They expect that you're going to set up a surround sound speaker system with that HD TV.
Yeah, I knew that when I bought a Sony in '99, they were side fired and they were hard to understand.
Too. Yeah, the Panasonics. I have a Panasonic Plasma too. They're backfired, rear fired. They're shooting it at the wall.
Mine are bottom fired.
Oh, bottom fired. Okay, okay. Mine are rear fired.
U60. It's a 50U60.
Yeah. I love those TVs. So, yes, you do want to get something better.
Anyway, I'm looking at the back of the TV.
Yeah.
And I see the speakers are bottom-fired on the Panasonic. And I look through the vent hole, and I can see two wires going to each speaker.
That's right. That's right.
Can I tap those speakers?
You can.
Because it's got a 20-watt system on it and hardwire to my clips. 4Ks.
If it's enough power, you bet.
No, I can do it at a half a watt, and the Panasonic puts out 20.
That would give you stereo, but it'd give you much better than the cheap speakers they put in there. Generally speaking, yeah. Generally speaking, what they expect you to do is take audio from the TV. They have a return audio feed, and put it into a surround sound system, or as most people do, they expect you to pump your satellite or your cable box and your DVR into an AV receiver and then into the TV. But either way, they don't expect you to be using those little wires and the little speakers. So, but yeah, absolutely. If you can get to the wires, disconnect them from the speakers, put them on your clips. Absolutely. Yep.
The clips can shake the house.
Yeah, they're very efficient.
They're 108 dB.
Yeah. So that should, Ed, you got it. That's a clever way to do it. Again, it's just going to be left right. It's not surround sound or anything like that. Although, just between you and me, Scott always makes fun of me, our home theater guy, for saying I think stereo is just fine. I do. I don't. I think, and I have a 5.1 surround system. I even have 7.1 capability. I don't use it, but I have the left and right side channels. I have the left and right front channels. I have the center channel speaker. I have a big old subwoofer. And yeah, I mean it's nice. It's a little strange. My son and I sometimes will watch a ball game, and you suddenly look over your left shoulder because you hear the beer guy behind you. A little confusing. We play video games sometimes, and the video games now have surround sound. That's actually scary. When you're in a scary video game and somebody's coming up behind you, you can hear it. But I, for a long time, was perfectly satisfied with left-right. It's only because Scott made me get a surround system that I have a surround system. He said, I can't work with you if you're going to keep using left-right speakers. David Toronto, Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thanks for calling. Good to talk to you. Are you in the Big Smoke, Toronto up north?
The Big Smoke, I'm sorry?
Are you in Toronto, Canada?
Yes, I am.
Don't they call that the Big Smoke?
You know, Leo, I don't know. I'm here for a year. I'm actually David from Cornell, the disgust professor.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you. Oh, now, everybody, you got it. This guy's amazing. Is it a psychology? Are you a psychology professor?
Yes, I am a psychologist. That's right.
So he's an expert in disgust. And he visited the studio, and we had a wonderful conversation. But if you think about it, disgust is very important. It saves your life a lot of times. You take the thing out of the refrigerator and you look at it and you gag. That saved your life, because otherwise, if you didn't have disgust, you might eat it.
That's right. One of the earliest lessons in the evolution of disgust came from that wonderful movie where the kids are chanting in that story, lard butt. And one of them, as revenge, drinks a bunch of castor oil, oof, makes himself throw up. Oof. And, of course, all of the children throw up.
Right. It's a communal experience.
That's right. That makes sense, because if one of you ate something bad,
maybe all of you did. Really, that's why when somebody, I don't want to go into this because the only problem with disgust is you start discussing it and everybody gets disgusted.
One word.
So I don't really want to disgust my audience, but I do find your discipline fascinating.
Well, thank you. I find your job fascinating. And I don't want to give away the secret, but if anybody is there and gets a chance to visit the Brick House, you are a wonderful host.
Thank you. And, I usually am. Sometimes I'm cranky. There are people who come here and go, boy, you were terrible. I say, I'm sorry, I was in a bad mood.
You work like 80, 90 hours a week, and you're nice to everybody who walks in. You deserve to be thanked.
I'm like an octopus. I have eight hands going all the time.
You need to stop. So I actually called about maybe a couple of months ago, and you gave me some great tips on how to record Skype audio well. Mm-hmm. And I'm calling now because I've actually started every once in a while getting to record two people in the same room.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it over Skype. So I go to conferences sometimes and I want to talk to a colleague and we do a little podcast and we put it up there. And I found a way to do it on my Mac where I can create a separate channel and use two USB microphones.
Really? That works?
No, it doesn't. So it turns out that it doesn't work. So you can create a separate, through your Mac sound preferences, you can kind of create a separate channel. And on GarageBand, it'll let you have these two inputs. But what happens is after about 15 minutes, the sync goes off.
Right.
And so you start hearing the other person's voice coming in through one microphone. And, you know, it works for about 5-10 minutes. But if you can record
each mic on a separate channel, you could probably fix that by just nudging it, you know, nudging it a little bit as it goes out of sync, you know, chopping the channel
right,
and nudging it.
The problem is, I don't know how to fix it. It's something, as I was doing some online research, it's something about the internal clock settings. It actually
right. Just
is easy for it to get out of sync. And then when you get that other voice coming in through the microphone.
You don't want that because it sounds, it's weird. Yeah. They're bleeding into each other.
Yeah. Recording. So our other option was to both hunch over the same microphone.
Right.
I'm not a big fan, but we use the Blue Snowball, and it has these options.
Right. Omnidirectional versus a directional.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But we both end up hunched over it to get the good audio. And so I'm thinking, what's a good, and I hope that other people might have a similar problem. Whenever you're recording two people and you want some decent audio, you don't want to use, what is the best sort of economical way? Do I need to get a mixer and some analog mic?
Well, that's how I would have done it. In fact, that's how I did do it. But you're also talking to somebody who's sunk a little bit of money into this. You could get a stereo microphone.
Okay.
That would be one way to do it. That you could put in between you.
Mm-hmm.
The
I see. And it points. And is that directional and just
yeah.
directional?
Yeah, the other one, the other solution, and somebody in the chat room is recommending, and it's exactly what I would have recommended it. Actually, it's Padre S.J. Robert Ballister, is to not use your Mac at all, but to use a standalone device like the Zoom. The Zoom H4 has very directional dual mics and is very high quality. We'll talk a little more in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. London is calling because it's Johnny Jett, who's on the line from London, England, where he's just, I don't know, touring around. Johnny's our travel guru, so of course he's somewhere not where we think he is.
Hey, I try it.
JohnnyJett.com. He's an expert on using the internet to get good travel deals, to have a better travel experience. Not just money. It's about having a better experience, finding the right hotel. You're staying at a pretty hipster hotel in London, right?
I'm staying at the ME Hotel. It's brand new. It's really hip. It's dark, so if you like that kind of thing.
The ME Hotel. It's a hotel built for me. What has two thumbs isn't in downtown London? Me.
I'll send you a photo, but when I checked in, there was written on my mirror, "Welcome to the ME Hotel." You know, Johnny Jett.
Was it in lipstick?
And yes.
Holy cow. Holy cow. That's pretty hot.
Yes. This hotel is
just
hot.
I guess they knew you weren't bringing your wife.
I guess so. Because
I'd be honest with you, if you check in with your spouse and you see that, it's like, honey, I didn't know I had... She's just the maid, honey. I don't...
So, no, what they call them here is Aurora Host, A-U-R-A, the Aurora Host.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
To give you a lovely aura around you in your room?
I don't know.
That's a little hip for me. I've been to, this is a new trend, isn't it? These boutique hotels that are so hip, I feel like I shouldn't be staying here. There's a hotel called the Hudson in New York City. You probably stay there because you're hip.
Yep. I've been there, yes.
The bar is a Louis the 14th table that's been hollowed out so it glows, and I can't even go in there. It's like I'm not cool enough for this room. But the negative on these hipster hotels, and I don't know if it's true of but it's certainly true of hipster hotels in both Toronto and New York. They're small. So this Hudson Hotel, there was a gutter around my bed of about 6 inches, and that was it.
No, that's not here.
No.
Well, at least the room I have is huge.
You probably have a very nice room because you're Johnny Jett. So what do you want to talk about this week, Johnny?
All right. So a couple weeks ago, I told you how I usually get deals, hotel deals. And that is I go to biddingfortravel.com. It's a message board, and then I put a bid on Priceline.
So bidding for and listen to last week's episode or look at the show notes because this was such a great
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks. This is such a great tip on knowing ahead of time what you're bidding for on Priceline.
So this one is the complete opposite. It's called backbid.com.
BACKBID.com.
So this is a reversible booking site or what am I talking about? Bidding site. So what you do is you book a hotel room,
yeah.
But make sure it's refundable.
Yeah.
So book a refundable room.
Okay.
And then you go on to Backbid, and you put in – you have to register. It takes a register. You register the name of the hotel you did, confirmation number that you received, the date you're checking in and checking out, how many people in the room. And then you say, okay, I want you – the hotels in the surrounding area to outbid this hotel.
Oh, hotels must hate this.
Yes. That's why I love it.
So let me get this straight. I'm going to call, let's say, the Hudson in New York City, and I'm going to book a refundable, very important.
Otherwise, you'll be very sad.
Refundable room. I go to backbid.com. I've already got an account there. I enter in the information about this room, the booking, the price.
Yep. The confirmation number.
And also
what the nightly rate was. And it asks you by every day. So it'll say, what did you pay for Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday?
Because the rates change. Hotels change on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's much more expensive.
So I booked a room at the Spring Hill Suites, the Marriott in Orlando. I actually had my travel agent do it because I wanted to make sure that it was refundable.
Yeah.
And so I had him do it, and I was in a hurry. And it was $108 was my nightly rate, averaged out to be.
Okay.
And then I put in the guest, just said two adults, one room, standard type. And it asked, how many stars do you want the hotel to be minimum to start?
Yeah, because Motel 6 could beat this price, but I don't want to stay there.
Right. So you could put, I want a 5-star hotel to bid or a 4-star.
Right.
So I put a 3 stars. I want at least 3-star because that's the one that I booked.
Yeah, match the quality of the hotel you're at. That would be sensible. Yeah.
Correct. And my other option was hotels within a short distance from your original destination or in a specific location in that city. So then I filled out, I registered, it's free. And then they email you a validation code and you got to put that in. And then you still have to forward your original a confirmation, so that way they know you're not messing around.
Yeah, because you could make this all up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then about 8 hours later, because it asks you when is the last time you want them to stop bidding, and I said like a day.
Okay.
About 8 hours later, I had 10 emails in my inbox, and they were all offers from hotels nearby, and I'm looking at them right now. So these guys went down $36 a night was the cheapest one I had.
Which is like a third, a fourth.
Yes.
Wow.
And that's with tax.
So
no, it says plus tax. Plus
at the
tax.
Same time so, as they hate this, they probably also love it because they're
taking business away from other places.
They're beating their competitors as long as they can beat them.
Yes.
And as is always the case, the more work you're willing to put in, the more you can save. Most people aren't going to do this. It's just too much work.
It was a lot of work. It was 5 to 10 minutes of work, hard work.
But you saved $100.
I saved a third.
Yeah.
Actually, two-thirds.
Backbid.com. It's an interesting idea. And it works, according to Johnny. You go to Johnny Jett's website. You can find out more. JohnnyJett.com. That's where he goes to fill you in on all the latest travel stuff. He does review places as well, but what we love him for is because We can always find great travel deals online thanks to Johnny Jet. In fact, he even has a deal finder on his own website, a number of them. And you should follow him on Twitter, too, at Johnny Jet. He's the travel insider. Johnny, enjoy London. What are you going to see there?
I'm going to see a play tomorrow night. Actually, Monday night I'm going to a play.
Oh, in the West End.
That's right.
Yeah. What fun.
I love London.
I do, too. Have a great time.
Thank you. All right. And I hope to see you. I'll see you next week.
See you next week. Johnny Jet, our travel insider. JohnnyJet.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. John's in Downey, California. Hi, John. Leo Laporte. Thanks for holding on.
Thank you for taking my call, Leo.
Sure, John. What can I do for you?
Well, I have two issues. One, I want to thank you very much for making me just a kind of a nice grandfather into a super-duper grandfather.
Did you give your grandchildren something nice?
I gave them, each one of them had an iPad.
We talked, right?
We did.
You said you were going to do that. You did that, huh?
I sure did.
And are they the happiest kids in the world?
Well, tell you the truth, on the first time they opened them up, they weren't really sure what they were. And now they can't put them down. They won't put them down.
That could be good or bad. Hey, John, can you hang on a little bit longer? I hear the music that says the top of the hour break is here. We got to go to news. Stay tuned. More to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The reason I turned on CloudPrint is I'm playing with the Samsung Chromebook. I'm going to review it for Before You Buy on Tuesday. And it's cool because, you know, it doesn't, but you just
you
print
know,
and
I
all
can
your
print
information,
anywhere
everything
I am,
you need for your work, just print because I set it up and it prints at my, I look wide. Spread out all over. I am wide.
In your documents, in the cloud, on the Google Docs, or the,
do I look like Matt Damon?
That's why you got to have Podio.
I think so.
Podio. The makers who go to my PC have brought us a tool for the modern.
Our show
takes all the information, all the people, everything you need to get your job done, and organize.
Thick, not wide.
One customized workspace that matches.
I don't know if thick is better than wide. Somebody said I look like Peter Griffin. That was nice.
And you know you can work from any mobile.
Oh, the aspect ratio. Oh, that's what you're talking about. I don't know. I don't know. I look like Roseanne Barr. Thank you.
Visit Podio.com. Sign up. Set up your first workspace.
I do look a little like Benny Hill, don't I? All us middle-aged, fat white guys look the same. Our show today brought to you by Rackspace. Oh, I am so excited to have Rackspace in here as a sponsor. Did you know Rackspace invented OpenStack? I mean, I guess, you know, they did it with the help of NASA. They paired up with NASA to create the open cloud. Everybody's talking about cloud these days, but you know, not all cloud is the same. Most of it is proprietary. The company owns it. Your data is stuck there. You can't move it out if you want to leave. What you want is an open cloud solution on open standards. I'm a big fan of open versus proprietary. You should be too if you're going to use the cloud, and that's why OpenStack is so cool. Rackspace co-founded OpenStack with NASA. And now they run the world's largest open cloud, so you're not locked into a single provider. You can move it around. Move your apps, your code, your websites between multiple OpenStack-based clouds, public or private, on-premises or hosted. It's really, really cool, and it's powering a whole wave of innovation in business, developers. It's just very exciting. I want you to try it, and you can. It's free, 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 as in free as in beer, free as in pizza, free as in a liberated, rackspace.com/open, rackspace.com/open, the open cloud company. I've been wanting Rackspace to advertise on our shows since day one because I'm such a fan, and partly because of their world-famous fanatical support team. They're really great. Rackspace.com/open for more information or to download a copy of the OpenStack, and you can deploy it yourself. Thank you, Rackspace. Thank you. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, getting ready for hour number three of the Tech Guy program. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S., outside the U.S., Skype out. Our website is techguylabs.com. I forgot to talk about this two-microphone solution, and I will in just a little bit. because we have our disgust professor wants to record two people in the same room. And I'll talk about this Zoom handy recorder, the H4N. Really clever solution that really I highly recommend. But we're going to get back to John. He's in Downey, California.
My one grandson, I think I shared with you, is autistic, and he's really taken to this.
That's awesome. Did you get any special software on it for him?
Yeah, he's got special software. I mean, my son went wild with apps,
right.
Different types of apps,
right?
And things that he has a counselor, advocate.
Great.
Told my son to get, and it's just. I can't thank you enough.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, I know a great many autistic folks who, for whom iPads are a wonderful toy and tool and adjunct companion. Yes. It's just you know, a lot of times when you're one of the symptoms of autism is just kind of this inability to relate to people. But for some reason, machines seem very easy and comfortable. And
he has a problem looking at people. Looking
right. So do I, by the way. I think a lot of the people in the tech industry are on the scale, you know, because we prefer machines to people, right?
Right, right. But he uses this app, and there's an engineer, a trained engineer, that looks at him and says, if you want to be an engineer, you have to look at me.
Oh.
It starts out with 2 seconds, and it increases to 4, and then 6.
That's fantastic.
My son's looking right at the engineers. I mean, how these things do this, I got no idea.
Well, it's got a camera. It's so exciting. So exciting to see what they're doing with this stuff. That's really neat.
I know. And it was really a special because my wife was able to see the press. So it's really great.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad the iPads worked out for the grandkids. Now what?
Well, now I got a problem. I've got another computer, and I have Vista on it.
Oh,
and
boy.
The monitor works on when I go online in safe mode, but when I just start it up normally, the monitor is black. It has black.
Yeah, that's probably a driver issue. What safe mode does is it starts the computer up in the simplest form possible, and one of the that's why they give you safe mode, because if you have a driver issue, going into safe mode often will get around that issue. In fact, the monitor is a classic, because when you go into safe mode, it starts up the monitor with a generic VGA, very low 640 by 480 driver. You notice it doesn't look very good.
Right.
Well, but it works. So what that tells me is that the driver that you have for your monitor is either corrupt or wrong. So what might work, is to go into safe mode, open the device manager in safe mode, and delete the driver for that monitor. Maybe it's not the monitor, maybe it's the video card. So delete the video, probably more likely the video card. While you're doing that, though, make a note, if you can, what kind of video card you have.
Okay.
Because what you could also do is go to the company that made the video card and download a more up-to-date driver, and that might solve it. But if you just delete the video card and reboot the machine, what Windows is supposed to do is say, oh, I don't have a driver for this monitor. Let me go get one and download a new one. Don't delete the VGA driver. You have to delete the driver for, yeah, somebody's pointing this out. Because when you're in the device manager, it's going to say, well, I'm using the VGA driver. Don't delete that one. Delete the fancier one. It would probably be under hidden devices. That's the one you need to delete. That's the one that is not going well. You could even do this, and this might even be the best way to do it, if you could figure out, and you might have to open the computer up or look at the manual for the computer, figure out what kind of video card's in there, and then just go online and download the latest driver for that video card, go into safe mode, install it, and see how that works. But that's why, you know, that's really why safe mode's there, and you were smart, very smart, to boot up into safe mode. That's exactly the point. Mark in Anaheim, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
First-time caller.
Thank you.
Long-time listener.
Welcome.
Hi. Yeah, I have a dilemma. Our Zenith analog
26-inch TV. The color was going out, so we upgraded to a Samsung 40-inch flat-screen TV.
Yeah.
And I have it set up with the other one was a VCR forehead hi-fi stereo OmniVision VHS analog player.
Wow.
And recorder. And I had to talk to the Target.
I feel like I'm getting a call from 1985. This is so exciting. How's President Reagan doing these days?
He's great. We missed him a lot. Anyway, yeah. So it took us, they were great at helping me, this tech company.
To get this VCR working with this new TV.
It's okay because I got the converter box set up with it.
It mustn't look very good, though, does it? See, one of the problems is you're now using such a high-quality TV, you can see all the defects in this analog signal.
I know. It's crazy. I got the HDTV cable set up for the... I got a Panasonic also DVD player.
Yeah, the DVD will look a lot better, won't it?
Yeah, it does.
And what will look best was a Blu-ray DVD, if you really want to see crisp. So, what's your problem? Sounds like you figured it all out.
I want to be able to use my VCR with the flat screen TV without the converter box.
Oh no, you have to. No, you have to use a converter. The converter box isn't what's making it look terrible. The VCR. That's the VCR. That's what it looks like.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, but do they have a digital VCR?
No. No, VCR is by its nature analog. It's an analog system. So I guess somebody could build a VCR with the box in it, but I don't think anybody's doing that. Are there maybe I'll ask the chat room. Are there any VCRs with HDMI out? That's the digital interface your TV needs. I don't think so. I think you have to pump that into the converter. The converter takes the analog, converts it over to digital, and then you go into your TV.
So I asked the tech guy that I for Target, and he said, wait a couple of years, and they might maybe make one.
No, that's the wrong direction. You need to go back to the 80s. In the future, nobody's going to make a VCR at all.
I know, that's what he said. They're trying to phase out VCR.
Trying to. I think they've done so. You're a holdout. I'm telling you. How's that Pat Benatar sounding these days? So... There are the one thing you could use that might work. There are VCRs, or there were anyway. There are VCRs that were a transitional product that had a built-in DVD recorder, and so you could go from a VCR to a DVD. And those you'd have to look, but those might have digital out because they have to have built into them that converter.
Yeah.
So,
where can I get something like that?
Well, I'm looking at overstock.com. Somebody in the chat room gave me a link to a refurb because I doubt they're... Oh, no, it says out of stock. See, these are gone. That's what I mean. The future is not bright for VCRs. Here's, let's see, Sears Dilly in the chat room's giving me a link with to Sears, the Funai Magnavox DVD recorder VCR combo. But before you buy it, make sure... It has HDMI out, and the HDMI out works with the VCR. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And it's still going to look terrible. I know one thing, though. I love Ring Central. I'm sounding like Paul Harvey. I love Ring Central. Hello, Americans. Stand by for news. Page 2. Ring Central is the phone system we use. Now, this is not a Reagan-era phone system. This is state-of-the-art. It's true, though. If you call a phone company, basically that's what they're going to put in your basement, a Reagan-era PBX from probably was made in the 1980s in the basement. Somebody's got to maintain it, set it up. It's expensive, and you don't need it anymore because you can use a cloud-based system that does more than that old PBX ever did. And, boy, and I am I glad that we decided to use RingCentral because I was clueless. I had no idea. I didn't know what we were going to do. And Russell, who we love you, Russell, has said, I'd used Ring Central for a couple of my clients, and I thought they were happy. So he said, why don't you guys try it? And I said, okay, and we did. And, boy, I love it. First of all, no setup fees. It's $20 per month per user, and that includes long distance. No startup cost, no PBX, complete configuration. Fax messages go to the smartphone or your mailbox. So do voicemails. They have smartphone apps for all the major smartphones, which is great because it means that you can make calls, business calls from your smartphone and build it to the company. But here, how about this? Business text messages now. They support SMS. So you can send text messages to your clients and colleagues from your business phone number on your smartphone, and incoming texts to that business number, like our 800 number, are handled. Before, they just bounced right off. Now they go right to your smartphone. You text them back and forth like a pro using the business line. What? I love RingCentral. All-inclusive pricing, as low as $20 a month per user. And you could start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. In fact, we got a really special offer for listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. So call this number. It's just for the RingCentral listeners, the Tech Guy listeners, 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980, or go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. RingCentral. If you call the Twit Brick House, you're going to get a Ring Central system, and you'll be impressed. I promise. Love it. RingCentral.com. Use the offer code TWIT.
I never heard a Republican speech, and the candidate said that's the first time I've ever given a Republican speech from a Democratic platform.
We're back in 1984. Reagan's in the White House, and the VCR is the king. But they're all blinking 12. I love that. time travel. I know, not to mock it. You know, when you bought that was a state of the art, but that was a while ago. So before a couple of breaks ago, we were talking about how to record multiple voices in the same room. And our caller was trying to do it on his computer, on his laptop, with two USB mics. They were out of sync, and then they were sharing a mic. You know what? Get rid of the laptop, first of all. That's not the way to do it. Unless you need it for Skype or something, then if that's the case, get the Behringer podcast system or some other mixer. It's a USB mixer. It allows you to put multiple mics in there. A lot of companies make these. Motu, M-O-T-U, Mark of the Unicorn. They make an excellent FireWire-based, and I probably now, these days, USB, maybe even Thunderbolt-based mixers that you put many mics in. I had a Motu box that I think handled 8 mics, and then I could just bring my laptop, plug the Motu into the FireWire on the laptop. Another Reagan-era invention, almost. And then we could have a roundtable recording to the laptop. But this is a nice solution. And Padre S.J., Father Robert Ballester, in our chat room recommended it. This is from a company called Zoom, ZOOM.co.jp. It's a Japanese company. And it's called their Handy Recorder. I have one because, this is a great thing for a radio reporter to carry around. Now, one of the things you might like, first of all, has built-in mics, and they aim in different directions. So you could put this thing on the table between two people, have one talk in one end, the other talk in the other end, and you get a great stereo recording, left and right channel, one mic for each. But also, this one has mic cables, mic connector, rather. So you could put a pair of professional quality microphones or lavs or something and mic up each person, and that would really sound great. And the quality is excellent. Actually, Padre's saying this will do 4 channels, so it'll use all 4 mics, the 2 mics on the bottom and the 2 mics on the top. This is the Zoom Handy Recorder H4N. Hard to find. I bought like 4 of them because I gave 3 to a school because I was teaching a how to do radio reporting class. So I got a few of those for the school. Because it's perfect for a radio reporter to go around with and record stuff. Anybody who's recording in the field. I have to see. So we got an engineer from LA who says, I use my Zoom recorder for ENG, electronic news gathering, and for studio quality recording. Really a good thing to have. It is on Amazon. Thank you, Donald Kelly, in the chat room. We'll put this link on our show notes at techguylabs.com. $269. That's down from like $600. It used to be really expensive. I can't imagine these will be around much longer. You do record to SD cards, so build it. Buy an extra SD card to record to, but you get many, many hours on an SD card. Just love this thing. This is a revolution in studio quality recording. the Zoom H4N. 8888-ASK Leo. Back to the phones. And Karina in La Habra, California. Hello, Karina.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Is it Karina or Karina?
Karina.
I will say it right from now on.
Thank you. I've called you before and you keep saying Karina. And I thought, I love you so much, I'm not going to bother with it.
No, always correct me. But now I'll know whenever you call from now on.
Thank you.
Karina. It means it means little heart.
Aww.
I think. I like that. I made that up, but. Aww.
Aw,
I practiced that. There's a certain way that people say aw when they're talking about little kittens, little fuzzy kittens, baby ducks. They go, aw.
Yeah.
You did it very well, Karina.
Thank you.
What can I do for you?
Okay. I have a Verizon. I'm got my iPhone 4.
Aw. No, sorry. That was inappropriate.
I love it. And I have in my 30-day billing period, I have 8 gigabytes. Well, my dilemma is I have a side business where periodically I get on and I watch videos.
You said 8 gigabytes because that's a lot.
Okay.
But if you watch videos, you could use it up, sure.
Right. So, yeah, I got a video that's almost 2 hours long, and then periodically I do. I like to get on Amazon and watch.
Sure, who doesn't? But yeah. you'd be better off doing that on Wi-Fi than on your 3G or 4G.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. What if I do it on Wi-Fi, then I won't use up the 8 gigabytes.
Right.
Okay.
That's why 8 is a lot. 8 is enough, in my opinion. As long as you can be near Wi-Fi. And I bet at home and at work you have Wi-Fi, so it would really only be when, you know, you're on the road that you'd need the 8.
Okay.
It's not 1 gigabyte, it's 8 gigabytes.
Right.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know what I'm doing because a week before the billing period
uh-oh.
Ends.
It said you'd used it up.
Notification. I've used 90% of my usage, and now I got to shut down.
Right. Well, it's good that they're warning you. In the old days, they didn't, and you'd get a nice bill.
Yeah. No, they warned me now.
Yeah, you're watching video that could easily go through 8 gigs. You know, Netflix, for instance, and I'm sure Amazon streaming is the same, is it what they call adaptive. So if it sees, oh, she's got plenty of bandwidth, you could use as much as 1 gigabyte an hour.
Uh-huh.
That means you got 8 hours of viewing, and I bet you did more than that. But are you sitting in your car in the middle of a field, or are you near a Wi-Fi access spot?
Well, see, you know, I'm probably near a Wi-Fi.
I bet you are if you could find it.
Yeah.
Most devices, portable devices, have, you know, a memory for which access spots you've used. And when you get near it, it turns it on. And in that case, it will stop using cell bandwidth.
Yeah.
So that's the key. Make sure you're using Wi-Fi if you're at home or at work, at least.
Okay.
8's a lot. 8 really is, should be, as Dick Van Patten once said, 8 is enough.
Oh, I remember that.
Aww. But not if you're watching video out in the middle of a field all the time. Stay by the Wi-Fi.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Karina. You. Great to talk to you.
Same here.
All righty. Bye-bye. Aw. I'm getting better at that. I just found, you know, I was just looking through my AT&T account, and I realized that I have 5 lines with AT&T. It's a family account. 2 of them are mine. One is unlimited bandwidth, and one is more modern, more recent. It only has 2 gigabytes a month, which is typical, by the way. 2 or 3 is fairly common. 8 sounds like a lot. You're probably paying a lot for 8. But these older legacy iPhone accounts still have unlimited. So you better be sure that I'm going to, my next, when I buy that HTC One phone from AT&T on Friday, I'm putting on that number. Aw. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Half an hour to go. The Tech Guy Show. You give me a ring now. They were telling me in the chat room, so I said I want to keep my unlimited plan on AT&T, and they said in the chat room, the only way you can do that is if you buy full-price unlocked phone. What? So when you go to AT&T and you say, I'm going to upgrade my phone, you got to be careful because they may eliminate this. You know, they don't want you to have an unlimited plan. In fact, the CEO of AT&T said one of the biggest mistakes he ever made was offering unlimited data plans on iPhones. Bitterly regrets it. Bitterly regrets it. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's see. Who's been on the line? Oh, I think Rudy's been hanging on the longest from San Diego, California, listening to Kogo. Hey, Rudy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I have another printer question regarding an HP DeskJet 460, you know, the mobile one?
Yeah.
I run a small business out of mobile, and I take my laptop with me. And when I'm finished, I'd like to print the invoice, but I've been using it via the cable.
Right.
And I want to use it via Wi-Fi.
Does it do Bluetooth? Because Bluetooth would be the best way to do it.
That's what I mean. I mean Bluetooth.
Yeah.
I have a Bluetooth card, and the light goes on in the back when it's in the back.
Okay, so it does have a Bluetooth card in it.
Correct.
Yeah.
When I go to install the new printer and I go through all the steps and it says, it goes to look for the printer, it does not show up on the list. The list is blank.
There's nothing. No Bluetooth shows up.
It's not detecting at all. No.
Now, are you putting the printer into Bluetooth discovery mode?
You know, I don't have the original CD that came with the printer.
There must be a... Well, look online for the documentation. It would have come with that Bluetooth card in all likelihood. You have to pair. You're trying to pair them, but in order to pair them, the printer has to be discoverable, and obviously it's not, or you would see it in the list.
Right. Online, on the HP site, they have the toolbox, and they have print and scan help, a software downloaded. I downloaded all of
that. I don't know. Is there a button or anything on the card or the front of the...
No. No, it's just a card with two lights. One light is stagnant when it's on green, and when...
Yeah, you want it to get it in that blinking blue-green mode, right, where it says, okay, I'm visible. Okay, let's pair. And you won't be able to print until you do that. And I don't know off the top of my head how to do that. Maybe somebody in the chat room knows. Turn on Discover. Maybe I can Google it. Turn on Discover. Once you know, like, what the term is you're looking for, it's a lot easier to Google something.
You're right about that also.
Yeah, so you want to make it discoverable on a HP Bluetooth card. Let's see if the right search. Sometimes you just go, okay, card, I want a pair.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about, I'm running Windows Vista Home Basic. Does that support that?
No, yeah, it's in the device.
Oh.
So that's what you got to do.
I hear you.
Unable to find a Bluetooth device. Yeah, this is all about... What we got to do is... We got to figure out how to get the card that you added. This printer has a slot for this card. Oh, wait a minute
right
now.
Right, you are. Yep.
Yeah. And then... here we go. Look at this. Donald Kelly, you are the winner. He's got a link to HP DeskJet 460 series. No discovery. Cannot find Bluetooth printer during installation. It is the toolbox. So you have the toolbox.
I have the toolbox.
Okay, go into the configure Bluetooth window.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what. This is like 20 steps. I am going to put a link to this support document in the show notes at techguylabs.com, or James DeRuffo will. He's taking notes right now.
Okay.
Basically, it's in the configure Bluetooth window. You have to printer name, change PIN code. You need to select a PIN code, reset device access. That's probably it. You need to reset device access. So that says, okay, let's go pair. And if you do all this right, then you should see it when you do the pairing from the phone or the other device.
You know, I believe I clicked on that Bluetooth box, and it came with an exclamation point error saying that it could not find the hardware.
Okay, now you know where your problem lies. Maybe that card's faulty or not mounted properly.
Yep.
So I would take a look at that. In fact, you might want to, this would be one to place a call with HP and say, I can't see the card. That's good. That's good. Perfect. Now you know, well, perfect in the sense that now you know what's wrong. Ronnie in Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Ronnie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Your voice is awesome. That's why I listen to you.
Oh, you're not interested in technology. You just like my voice.
No, just because you're smart and your voice is awesome.
Smart and a nice voice. And I say, aw, perfectly.
I have a question and a couple of recommendations.
Perfect. I love that. It's like the little thing they have at the 7-Eleven says, take a penny, leave a penny. You're going to take a penny, but you're going to leave two.
Yeah.
Good man.
On my where my TV is and all my crap, my PlayStation and all that, I put a Trendnet gaming adapter on there.
Yeah.
And my router
yeah.
always kicks it off. I was trying to figure out how I can keep it from kicking it off and I have to physically, because I'm lazy, don't want to go over there.
Yeah, I didn't want to get up and go over to that shelf full of junk.
Yeah.
And kick the thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is a Wi-Fi adapter for the Xbox.
For the PlayStation 3 for the cable box, for the DirecTV. So what I did was I put a little 4-port switch on it so I could have.
Ah, I see. It's a little switch. I got it.
Yeah. So, but the. My
so it's a, is it an HDMI switch or what is it a switch for?
Yeah, it's a RJ45 because you know nothing has HDMI on it.
Oh, I get it. Well, yeah. So you don't have wireless?
No, I do have wireless. I have the wireless. It's a wireless adapter and it turns everything to RJ45.
Well, the good news is the PS3 has Wi-Fi built in, so I just turn on the Wi-Fi on the PS3 and you don't have to kick the Trendnet anymore.
Yeah, but that trend that was outperforming my PS3, that's why I used it.
Oh, it's better. I get it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Boy, you wouldn't expect that. All right. So it's taking the Wi-Fi, turning it into, it's a bridge. It's a wireless Ethernet bridge.
Yeah.
Turns the Wi-Fi into Ethernet. And is it auto-switching? How does it know?
You go in and configure it. You plug it into the computer and you configure it, and then you after that, once it's configured, then you just plug it in wherever you want in the house. And
it has. Does it have 4 ports? I'm still confused.
No. It just has a single port.
It has one port. And so, how are you switching between the different?
I bought a little 4-port RJ45 switch.
Got it.
So
got
it. Goes in there, then it goes out to everything else sitting back.
And
there.
They can they all work at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay. So the problem is this Trendnet is just not consistently working.
Yeah, the Netgear keeps timing it out, and I have to unplug it so I can get an IP address again. I was wondering maybe if I needed to go static with it, or do you have any recommendations for
that? Would be one thing to do. It's always risky when you say, okay, here's your address. You got to make sure you use it somewhere in a range that nobody else is going to, you know, go to 100 or something so nobody else will compete with it. Because once you start assigning static addresses, you always have a little bit of a risk. Boy, I don't know, Ronnie. I'm thinking about this. It sounds like something's wrong with the Trendnet, to be honest with you. It shouldn't keep losing its configuration. Let me think about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm free and cheap. But that's another story. The Gizwiz is here, Dick DiBartolo. Now, Dick, maybe you can help me. The guy,
yes,
he's Ronnie from Anchorage, Alaska. He's got a shelf full of crap, including a PS3, an Xbox, a bunch of stuff. He's got Wi-Fi in the house, but what he wants to do is use his Trendnet Ethernet bridge to connect the Wi-Fi via the Ethernet bridge, then into a switch. A network switch, which then feeds the four other devices on that shelf of junk. Problem is, for some reason, the Trendnet keeps losing the connection.
Oh,
he has to go over and kick it.
Oh, yeah, you can't have it that way.
Oh, okay.
Take the junk off the top shelf, put it on the bottom shelf, get the Sunbeam Hukanaka 109-234.
The 234?
Don't get the 233.
Okay.
That's bug-laden.
Ah.
Okay, and then if that doesn't work, just throw everything out and start over.
You got that, Ronnie? That's directly from Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He writes you, but I bet you that you are kind of the geek at Mad Magazine, aren't you? I
mean, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, when they, you know, when they would assign movies, if it was movies that had a lot of technology in it, they'd say, Dick, this is a natural for you. You go do it.
That's why you wrote the Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Poop Side Down Adventure. Well, that I got because I was a boater.
Right? Oh, right. Basically, yeah. They're just making this up as they go along, aren't they?
Yeah. Sort of. Yeah. Right. Dick, no, if it was political or family, someone else got it.
Not you. Not you.
Not me.
Okay.
Not me.
Dick is Mad's maddest writer, but he's also a gadget hound, and he joins us every week to talk about a gizmo or a gadget. What do you got for us?
Boy, I have a fun gadget. It's called Magnetize, and they spell it Magnetyze. This is a new way to charge your smartphone, assuming it's the Galaxy 3 or the iPhone, the 4 and the 4S.
I just love this. Not the 5 but yet.
Not the 5. They're working on the 5 now. But it's really neat, Leo. So comes a little case that clips onto your phone, and then it comes with, it's a two-piece kit, a little stand that when it's time to charge your phone at night, you just hold the phone up against the stand. The stand just grabs it because your case has a magnet in it, and the little easel has a magnet in it, so it starts charging instantly.
So this is not inductive charging. This is just a magnet that gets the charge from it. And
that
passes
is correct.
It through the, so you have to use their special case.
You have to use their case.
Yeah.
But what's nice about it is, unlike a lot of them where you lay it on a pad and you can't see it, this easel holds it in an upright position so you can see it. And you can actually rotate it 360 while it's charging and on the case. And the second little piece that comes with it is a little USB cable that comes with a, it ends in like a little magnet the size of a nickel. So in your office, if you don't have your easel with you, you just plug that into your computer, and that's also magnetic. Just slap it on the back of the phone. It instantly pulls it into the proper place and starts charging your device.
I like this idea. We're seeing, like, on the new Windows phones and some other phones, inductive charging, like the Qi charger for Windows Phone, where you just, it's like, it could be a pillow, it could be, a speaker, where you, and you just put it there, you don't have to, there's no attachment.
Yeah,
this
that's great.
This is different, though, and you can, of course, it's better if it's built into the phone, you don't have to use a special case, but this looks,
exactly.
It's a slim-looking case, it's not a bad case.
Absolutely, and the advantage of this is, once you, if you get a new phone, you just buy the new case backing.
You keep everything
else. You
don't
need to buy a whole system.
Well, how much is the whole system?
It runs, depending on what sort of case you want, $50 to $60.
Okay. Cool.
This is, I'm sorry, $60 to $70.
This is from a company called Buku, B-U-Q-U.
Tech. Buku Tech.
Buku Tech. But, you know, magnetize with a Y-Z would probably be the best. Yeah. That's how I found it. I Googled magnetize.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Now,
as you would.
Yeah. If you Google GizWiz, you'll go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's website. And on this site, there's a lot of stuff, including information about the Buku Magnetize right there on the front page. And in that column in the middle, you'll see a button, What the Heck Is It? That's a chance to play the What the Heck Is It game and win an autographed copy of Mad. Now, last month's game, I was sure that was like a badminton birdie or a lawn dart.
You were close. It was a good mitten birdie. So you were very close.
Well, it's a funny. It was a drain. It's a drain plug.
Yeah. That stops hair from going down the drain.
Yeah. But see, this is where Dick's tricky because he the picture's upside down. Had you put it upright, it would have fallen over. But it might.
That's right.
It also would have been easier to figure out what it is. If you could see it before it fell over. Now, I don't know if that's what he's done with this next month's game, but go to gizwiz.biz, click the What the Heck Is
This
It game.
This would solve your caller's problem, by the way. That's all I'm going to say.
Ah, instead of the trend net, use what looks like a towel ring, but okay. Now, here's the deal. He's going to give you give away autographed copies of Mad Magazine. He autographs them. That's the downside. But
but I use your name, so
a little bit of best of both, worst of both worlds, really. 12 Mads for the correct answer, 24 for the wrong answer. So my suggestion is come up with a cute, silly answer. You have a better chance of winning. And this will be for the next couple of months. It'll go through April. you're planned for the June edition of Mad Magazine. Dick, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
Stick around.
See you Tuesday.
The Giz Fizz is coming up featuring my assistant, Liz Lemon.
Yep, it's going to be Giz Fizz Liz.
Right after the radio show. Our show... Oh, that'll be interesting. Our show today, she like me, she sits on a ball. Unlike me, she bounces constantly. So she's got thighs the like a Mack truck. You might want to ask her about that, Dick. Chris in Virginia, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I have a Asus G73SW.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, it shuts itself off when doing a video game.
Ah. That's often the case when you play video games. Of course, you're working the computer hardest. It's probably a heating, overheating problem. So there's a couple of things to look at. Chris, is it a laptop or is it a desktop computer?
Laptop.
Yeah. Okay. So a desktop computer, you could go in, open it up, make sure the fans are running, that there's not dust clogging the fans, or sometimes the fan that's on the processor can slip off or not have a good attachment. That could cause it to shut down. It shuts down to protect itself because it's getting too hot. And when you say gaming, almost always that's what's going on, because that's really challenging. Laptops, a lot harder to figure out. You can't really open it to look at the fan on the processor to see how the airflow is going in the laptop. You can't really open it up to clean out the dust. Often there's a fan on the graphics unit, and if you think about it, that's going to get as hot as the CPUs and the GPUs doing all the work in a game, so that's going to get hot too. I guess the best thing to do is just to feel the laptop when you're gaming. If it gets super hot, you might want to get a little fan to go underneath it, or bring it in and get it cleaned up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.